we were very cost conscious, and we looked at things like how can we make it look the best? How can we be scrappy but not crappy? So that's kind of one thing we say internally in our company, like, how do we spend the least amount of money and get the most beautiful thing?
Hey, I'm Shuang Esther Shan, and welcome to Shopify Masters, your companion for starting and building a business. For the Stirrer team, they've challenged the status quo with an oral care industry, and they're redesigning how electric toothbrushes are being made. But how do they get customers to change their behavior and give Stirrer brushes a try? Geeve Safavi and Mark Rushmore are chatting all about scaling this episode. From zero to $30 million in sales in just 2 years, to getting featured by Forbes and New York Times, to securing key partnerships with Boots in the UK and Air One in the United States. Mark and Geeve, it's so great to have both of you back here.
Thanks so much. Again. Can I just say, when you read that out, it feels like a bit of an out-of-body experience, because it makes it sound like so much better or something. I don't know. Like, but all those things are true. It's just, it's kind of wild case of all things. Yeah.
Well, it's a giant group reflective therapy session.
Yeah.
No, you guys did those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess we did.
We did. Yeah.
It's kind of wild. Yeah.
I think step one to scaling is convincing people to go out of their routine and adopt something new. So how did you approach that, to get strangers on the internet to take a chance on Siri?
I think there's three core steps. The first one, and it's like, it's a big business 101. It's like, ask people what they dislike about their current products or routines and listen to them. So that's what we did. Step two was design a product to solve those problems. And step three is to like tell people, hey, do you have that problem? Our product solves that problem. And we sell it for this price. And like, I know that sounds so basic and like business 101, but it's kind of true. And in our category, you know, everyone brushes their teeth. 50% of people use an electric brush, but a lot of people don't like, you know, the batteries that are constantly dying. No one uses a Bluetooth app. So have you ever used a Bluetooth app for brushing your teeth?
Never.
Of course not, right? Yeah. People don't like that gunk that forms on the bottom, or people often don't take their electric brush when they're going traveling because, you know, cases are like really clunky and just full of plastic. And then lastly, you know, we rediscovered people feel not great about all the plastic that's being thrown away that ends up in landfill and oceans. And so for us, you know, we thought, okay, let's solve these problems in, you know, a variety of different ways. So, you know, we have a 40-day battery life. We have a travel case with UV light. It's USB-C charged. You don't need like this random charger that only works with your toothbrush.
And it's being clunky.
And so, you know, it sounds so simple, but in a way it kind of is simple. People are like, oh yeah, my battery does always die. Like, oh, I don't take it traveling. Oh, I hate that gunk.
I can't recycle my toothbrush heads.
Oh, look, there's this brand that does it and it looks great. But are they really good? And I think that's where we're really lucky, because people then go to the reviews, and the early adopters who did take the risk go like, I really love this. I never thought I'd say I love brushing my teeth, but I'm looking forward to it now. Mm-hmm. And I think that sort of early momentum then led to more people to try it. And the more people that try, the sort of, you know, the more reviews we got. Yeah. And then the more reviews we got, like, then we started getting press. And the press started saying they love it. And I think it's kind of snowballed from there.
I would just add one thing. I would say that user feedback-driven innovation that is sufficiently differentiated, right? So because all these features that Mark's mentioning now, there aren't many other brands on the market that have them, at least all in one package. And so the differentiation is really key to getting early adopters to try it, to take the risk to try a new brand. And then it's key to getting press to write a story about you, which is free marketing. We didn't pay for anything in the beginning, and we started getting articles coming in even during our pre-launch. And so that really helped us gain traction.
And I think also there's a big addressable market. Mm. How many people do you know that brush their teeth?
Hopefully all of my
all of your friends, right?
Yeah.
And you know, and so actually, yes, like, we did the business 101 of asking people, like, we didn't come up with this, like, the problems or even actually, you know, it's like we literally asked people and listened, but we did so in an enormous category, and an enormous category that's growing. And so I think you've got like those two pillars, because we could listen to, you know, people who do some like very niche activity and listen to their problems and come up with a solution. Yeah. But to a certain extent, your ability to scale that is limited by the total addressable market.
Completely.
the other important part is when you launch, you tap into an influential category of individuals. And I think for Siri is the fact that you did get dental professionals involved and get their feedback and also get them kind of act like influencers in a way to spread the word of Siri. So how did you go about finding those professionals and actually building up those relationships?
So actually, like, I just told my dentist about what we were doing. and she was like, wow, that's incredible. Like, I really resonate with that. And, you know, especially on the sustainability side, like, there's so much waste in this category. And I've been saying for years that we should do something. And then, and she's been, you know, Dr. Alexandra Day, big shout out. Thank you.
Huge fan.
But it turns out, unbeknown to me, that she's also one of the most influential dentists in the UK. And she's on the judge of the dentist of the year. And actually, you know, she's introduced it to lots of people, but another bit of
Damien Wellmesley.
Yeah.
Scientific Researchers Dental Association for 20 years. I heard him on a podcast, wrote him an email.
This is one of the things I love the most about this guy. Like your ability to just like contact people and get a response is just phenomenal. So, you know, this guy is the former scientific advisor to the British Dental Association. Not only that, he is one of the co-authors of the Cochrane Review, which, Shuang, you probably know, is the foremost leading publication, like academic research into the efficacy of electric toothbrushes versus manual ones. He is like one of the forefathers of the electric toothbrush. And he managed to build this relationship with him and get his input. And that's
Just early on, he gave us so much feedback. I mean, for us, this is a category. You know, your dentist is the biggest influencer. Mm-hmm. You go and see them and then she will say, you need an electric toothbrush. You're brushing too hard. Or, you know, you need an electric toothbrush. It'll work much harder for you. And it's a category driven by performance. Mm-hmm. And so for us, we wanted to make a more enjoyable experience, design-led, that was more sustainable, but we didn't want to compromise on performance. So for us, we had three variables when we were designing Siri, which was experience, performance, and sustainability. And many companies will do one and will be very sustainable, but it's not that great in performance. You know, like the non-sustainable product's better. Or it's great performance, terrible design.
Yeah.
And so for us, it was like, how do we maximize across all these three? And so on performance, in a category that is driven by performance, we knew we had to stack up. And so only by speaking to dentists that we would reach out to get their feedback, were we able to get real insights like, oh, so a lighter brush actually is better because people don't have to strain holding it, and actually having a softer mode for people who are just getting started on it will be important.
Or even the insight that, you know, to get the most effective clean, you need to brush for a full 2 minutes twice a day. The average length that people use a brush for is 40 seconds rather than 2 minutes. And so, you know, things like having the timer or not having to constantly charge the brush or just making it more enjoyable to use actually increases people using good habits, and in turn, like, using good habits gives you like a much better quality of clean. But we even took it one step further. We found out the clinical research center, which is the leading place for clinical research in oral care globally and has worked on every electric toothbrush for the last sort of 20-30 years, and we did our clinical trials there because we knew the standard for performance had to be high to talk to dental professionals. They're not interested in if it's, you know, oh, we've got this great idea for a sustainable toothbrush. It's like, show me the evidence. And so I'm really sort of proud that we did that research at this center, and the results were stunning, you know, like comparable to brushes which are a multiple more expensive than Suri.
I think they had, and we left that, we sent them 30 brushes. And in the end, we were like, what are you going to do with the brushes? And they're like, Oh, we'd like to keep, our technical engineers would like to keep them. I was like, what? Oh, no, they want to use them. And so it was like, oh, wow, the leading clinical center wants to use our brushes for personal use. Yeah. So that was really cool.
To pick up on that story also, I think what's astounding, I'm also amazed, same as Mark, is the fact that you cold pitch someone who is like the forefather of electric toothbrushes, like the ultimate gatekeeper. So I have to ask you, how do you even comprise an email or like a cold message like that?
Before you answer that question, can I say there's someone who he's done it with who's even better? I don't know if we can mention their name.
Who?
So may have been influential at a leading Californian company.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I'll tell you the method, but yeah, you can, yeah.
So you also cold emailed this guy who is Sir Johnny Ive.
At Apple?
The creator himself of the iPhone along with Steve Jobs.
Well, I've been a massive fan of all of his work. So that's pretty... But I mean, that's on... And we send him some brushes and we got back
and we got this email back. I'll show it to you, actually. It's like... I saved a screenshot of it. So it's like 26 minutes past 10 p.m. at night. I get like a flurry of messages and a phone call. I'm in bed with my lights off. Like, what is it? Why are you calling me? He's like, check your WhatsApp. So I look and look at my email, and sure enough, we have this incredible email from Johnny Ive being like, I'm incredibly impressed with this product. Like, well done. Like, congrats to you guys.
Smiley face.
And the adrenaline that shot through my body, we were both like giggling in bed. You were in bed. I was in bed, like, just chatting. I was like, how on earth did you do this? And I'm like, oh, I thought I'd email him.
I think, okay. So I don't know about you, but I get so many emails, like cold call emails a day, and it's just like, let me help you grow your business. Let me do this. I think there's a quick question, Geef. Like, do you have this one? There's a general lack of authenticity, and I think it's refreshing when you see it's an authentic email without, like, that is not serving a purpose other than it's sort of like, can you help me? You know, and people will respond to that if written very short and just like, hey, you know, I'm a mass, like, Sir Johnny Ives, I wrote him. I was like, I've been your biggest fan. You know, like, we decided to design a toothbrush that is better, taking a lot of cues from Apple and like how they made things more minimalist but served a great function. Love to send you one, see what you think. And got a response back. But Professor Damien Walmsley, similar lines, like, we're on a mission to make better electric toothbrush. We want to reduce oral care waste. Loved you hearing you on the podcast. Would love to talk to you for 5 minutes if you ever had time. No, you're really busy. Just 5 minutes, just to get insights.
It's those concise emails, I think.
It has to be short.
Key.
Mm-hmm. And authentic, right? Because if you sound like, you know, we'd really love to take your time for an hour to chat more about this, see how you could help us, it's kind of not so authentic. Nobody wants to respond.
Actually, I was listening. There's this guy called Harry Stebbings who's got this very famous podcast in the venture space called 20VC, and he talks about this ability of founders, and also, like, he himself's very good at it, to be fair, of cold emailing, mm-hmm. like, people and getting a response. And he'll say, like, I think he famously cold emailed this, maybe it was like Reid Hoffman or someone, 40 times, or Mark Benioff or something, trying different hooks, trying different things, and eventually got through to him. And I think I must admit, like, I really admire Geef's ability to
I'm not
pretty much get anyone.
But I think most people will respond, right? If it is, I respond to most my authentic emails, but even then, sometimes I miss.
I don't know. I've seen your inbox.
Yeah. I've seen yours.
No, it's an important factor for, like, unlocking those connections that helps you to scale. The other part of scaling I wanted to talk about is also how you perfected the online shopping experience. I know that even though both of you feel like there's still so much to do with the site, to me, I feel like it's such an enjoyable experience to be on your site. So,
oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I can't wait for you to see it in another 6 months' time. Like, honestly, like, we just need to keep having this conversation, because
it's nice to hear that from you working at Shopify, because totally. We look at it and we just see the problem every day, yeah. Like, not problems, but where, like, we're like, oh, that graphic could be nicer, we could have done that nicer, but, like, I mean hands down, like, I would say Shopify has been a huge enabler in that from the beginning. We did our own custom theme build. I had previously had the pleasure of helping some companies re-platform to Shopify. Some stories where I really had to learn quite a lot, because, like, the dev was like, day one was like, here are the keys, I quit, you figure it out, because it was like a clunky old site that had a terrible SQL database I couldn't understand. But that really got us to learn Shopify really well. And I'd say when we launched, like, I mean, I'm always reading the blogs, reading everything. Shopify Markets, from day one, we launched on Shopify Markets, and we were able to be in the US, UK, Germany, we even had on a few other markets. And we ship worldwide still today. And that has been such an enabler of being able to act like you're really big and fulfill like you're really big, but still be very small and two people around a kitchen table.
I think there was a really important decision early on as well, where someone proposed to us using, a more complex, bespoke version. And we really made the decision to go with actually like an existing.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of people want us to do more complex stuff, but like our theme's really beautiful. We need to say that things like better than, I mean, we're always like, we tag even our packaging, we tag everything, right? Because that's how we should be, like always trying to be better. But we spent a lot of time focusing on simple functionality. Shopify make it very easy to do that. The checkout is really smooth. It's nice that, like I was saying earlier, we haven't, there's so many low-hanging fruits, we haven't done anything in the checkout or like taken advantage of extensibility, you know, and all the features we can add now. But I think sometimes the sort of simplicity of like the core function of what a site needs to deliver makes it easy for the user to get through. And that's what I think is enabled by Shopify with us. So that is
totally,
that's something that the simplicity of that and the constant optimization, making it a very simple path to just give me my product. Let me use Shop Pay and not have to log in. Like people love that feature.
So. And I think that's actually a feature. A lot of our business decision making is often you can go for a more bespoke, complex, expensive, complicated solution to a problem, or you can kind of focus on like the core basics and optimize those. And I think that's one of the things that's incredible about Shopify is that we time and time again, like it's so easy to get tempted by this like shiny new thing, but actually just kind of like nailing the basics and building on those foundations has meant that we can reallocate time that you could spend on this like bespoke customization.
But we do want to make things more complex and bespoke and beautiful. So yeah, we are working on it.
But it's that like tension between the two, because I think early days you can get lost.
Like, we were very cheap early days, yeah. I'd say. Like even like working with partners to help us design stuff. We brought in a lot of things in-house. We tried to do it ourselves. I tried to design a website, which was terrible. Luckily, like I think we launched that one day and I was like, this is not working. But the nice thing about themes is you can quickly publish a new one. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like the old one you had. But I think because of our sort of like, we didn't have very much money, a lot of it had to go into the product. We were very cost conscious and we looked at things like, well, how can we make it look the best? How can we be scrappy but not crappy? So that's kind of one thing we say internally in our company, like how do we spend the least amount of money and get the most beautiful thing?
And that's the power of the business. And like, I think that's something that we really want to keep is this like lean approach, you know, like where do we want to spend our time and our money in to be as effective as possible. And yeah, I think Shopify is like a great enabler and a great leveler. Like there's no way we could have built a business to this scale that we have, you know, without that power.
And allowed us to trade up as we could afford it.
Yeah.
Right. So in the beginning we couldn't afford obviously Shopify Plus. But as we've gotten bigger, it's been possible to trade up to more features and then be able to grow rather than day one try and do everything, you know, pay for stuff that you can't afford before you've had the sales.
Yeah. Are there any like other apps, services outside, even though I love hearing about all of the great anecdotes about Shopify, but anything within our ecosystem that you've really enjoyed in the scaling stage?
Oh, yeah. What's your favorite? You love the fairing and post-checkout survey.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's one of my apps. Like, I must check that. Like, big shout out to fairing. Actually, I think I met some of the fairing guys at a conference recently in New York, and I was just like, this poor sales guy was like trying to sell. I was like, no, I'm your biggest fan. Like, what else can I do? Like,
I'm already converted.
Yeah, and I was like, you know, how can we make this more powerful? And he was like, okay, like, wow, you're a bit of a power user. But that's post-checkout surveys. And so, you know, we started getting feedback from our customers. You know, where did you first hear about Suri? And it's really interesting from an attribution perspective, but also from like the comments that people make and, you know, seeing how that changes over time, seeing our organic sales versus say like from Instagram or influencers is rising and just sort of seeing how our mix changes. So yeah, I must say.
Fair. I mean, yeah, it's great because even like, you know, people will put like, I heard you on a podcast and then that comes in there. And so it's really cool to see that. I said gorgeous, I think previously, that helped us a lot with customer experience.
Our email?
Email?
Klaviyo.
Oh, Klaviyo. Yeah. Email. Some of the fundamental ones that I'm sure many other people have shared. That's the beautiful thing about some of the really strong established apps in the app ecosystem.
We've got some great AI tools as well, which have been really effective.
A couple things we've used. We use Triple Whale for reporting. We find that found when it came out. We were early on it, and like,
can I just say we're not sponsored, but if anyone from any of these companies does want to sponsor us to give them a shout out, it's like, happy to take
free
stuff.
Text us now. We'll say it.
Cold email.
One small app, I mean, not small, very big, we used Matrixify for bulk changes. We worked with a lot of influencers, and we need to overnight quickly change their discounts. Boom, we did it by uploading an Excel sheet. It was really nice. Yeah, we don't use enough AI. Probably we'll start to use more AI, but we, in general, I would say we're probably not too app heavy. We use Kendo for reviews. There's quite a few big players in reviews. We're not so app heavy, but there's quite a few ones that we wouldn't be able to live without.
Siri continues to be really captivating and getting people engaged online through all of the teeth brushing content. What's the strategy to make really engaging content to your followers?
For sure. I think, you know, we've come at it from a slightly different angle aesthetically. Big shout out to our design, our sort of head of creative, Kate Gorell. She's phenomenal and is like, you know, constantly step changed, you know, how we do things aesthetically, and also to Dylan, who designed the product, and I think
Anna, our head of brand, who works on social. We might as well shout out to our whole team.
Yeah, shout out to the whole team, sorry. But like, I think, you know, just that relentless passion to look at things in a slightly different way. You know, like there's like a very familiar trope in our category of, you know, like actors in white coats in a lab, you know, and we didn't want to do that. We wanted to
highly
do
saturated photos of like blinded, like with a big smile.
And so, you know, we've just got a different take on it, which is we feel more relevant to our audience. And yeah, just kind of like building on that.
Yeah. I mean, another build on that would be like we want to talk about, like, it's a forgotten ritual. You do it twice a day. It's your first thing you do when you wake up. It's maybe your last thing before you sign off and get into bed. It's 2 minutes. And we portray it almost like a chore and like a hygiene routine that isn't enjoyable when it can be. You're starting your day. You're thinking about nice things, mantras, like, this is going to be a great day. You're signing off at night. You know, you're winding down. Like, it's more of a well-being category. We'd love it to be a well-being category and picture it that way rather than a sort of clinical sterile environment of like content like brushing your teeth, you know, optimize your oral care regime. So that's kind of how we've tried to show the content. And if you look at our Instagram, like, you'll see really beautiful bathrooms that are inspiring, like people traveling with their toothbrush, which is something that is really hard to do because you often have to take a big charger and like the case is even bigger. And so just playing into the, I guess, the features that make us differentiated.
And in terms of just advice, it's just like trying so many different things. I think that's been really fundamental to just constantly iterate. We get it wrong a lot. Like,
we
actually
do.
You know,
what did we get wrong?
Early, like, actually, this is probably one of my favorite stories. But we haven't talked in like ages because we're so busy, but our first photo shoot was online, and we found some like online person who would do the photo shoot in the US whilst we were sort of directing it over Zoom. So it was like kind of like COVID times. And I think, I don't know how many images we got from the shoot, like 500. And I think maybe one was usable.
Tough product to shoot because like the smiley with the toothbrush in your mouth isn't the most flattering shot.
And we just, it sucked so badly. It was pretty awful. And like, we have so much content that like looking back now is like really embarrassing and like just really ugly.
True to, you know, like, you know, we're constantly learning. We're constantly evolving. You can click through our Instagram all the way to the beginning and you'll see how terrible our brand looked and how we evolved it over time. Yeah. We don't archive that because that's true, right? Like, everybody starts from somewhere.
Exactly.
And we started from there. So like, we want people to see it, you know, and be like, oh, wow, that's how your branding looked. That's how these things, and like, we constantly evolved it. And I think that's one of the biggest things that we'd shared as advice, that like, you know, be comfortable with where you are and where you want to go, and know that you're going to always evolve. Mm-hmm. Like, your branding is always going to get better. Like, you will, the product will get better. You'll reiterate it. Things will always get better. Just be comfortable with where you are. And if you're not comfortable, then fix it, you know, and then accept that when you get to hire really great talent, that they will make it slightly better and better and better.
Yeah. But truthfully, like, we're never satisfied. So it's really nice when you're like, oh, you know, it looks great. And we're like, it's great, but could it be better? Like, oh, actually, maybe we should be doing it like this. And I think that same, I don't know that we'll ever stop doing that. I think it's always going to constantly be like, you know, how can we take this further?
But we enjoy that.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think when you're embarrassed with past work, where you kind of like cringe a little bit, I feel like that's the true sign of growth, where you're like, I am improving, I am growing. The most important part about your scaling story, I think, is the most impressive part is, one, you did fundraise in this rather tough climate, especially within direct-to-consumer and CPG. Not only that, but you're also able to reach profitability, which is something really hard to achieve in this space. In this kind of financial side of things, what would you say for founders entering into entrepreneurship, thinking about fundraising, thinking about profitability?
So I think like there's a lot of stuff now that everyone can see where like gone are the days where you just like have an idea, raise like $10 million mm-hmm. and like, yeah, blow it all and then work out like afterwards, like, oh, how am I going to make money? And so I think, you know, with interest rates and the way things have changed, is that a bad thing? I'm not sure. Like, it comes back again to like business 101. It's like, you know, buy a product at this price, sell it at that price, make sure that the profit margin like more than covers your costs, and you make a profit, right?
Really understanding your economics.
Yeah, it's like unit economics. And so, you know, from the beginning, we sort of knew like, okay, we need our gross margins to be here. We need like our operating costs to be there. And that's been like a very central thing from the beginning. It wasn't sort of, you know, oh, we'll improve it in the future somehow. It was very much like, you know, we want a business that can be profitable. And so I think, you know, I would just sort of stick to that. You know, like there's lots of categories and there's lots of examples of brands who are doing really great job, like Jolie is one in the US, which mm-hmm. is, you know, I think it's bootstrapped, you know, True Classic, you know, I don't know how many hundreds of millions they're doing, but like, again, a bootstrap brand which has been profitable from like almost day one.
Yeah. Team of three. I did talk to the team at Jolie, so yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah. What's your advice there?
I mean, getting to know your unit economics is really important. Just being a spendthrift also in the early days, like spending out what really matters and not, you know, splashing it out on things that, like expensive shoots that you can't afford. Like we could have done $20,000 shoots, but we didn't because we couldn't afford it. Even though we wanted our images to look like the $20,000 shoots. So finding ways you can be scrappy as much as possible. And I'd say, you know, raising is hard. It takes time. You know, it took both of our time quite a lot away from the business, finding time in the day to do it. But as Mark said, you know, you just need to find, you know, a couple or one right investor. I mean, we've been really fortunate to have some really good investors who have backed us from the beginning. I mean, today, Salica Investments came in really early, then Jamjar, then V3 and DMG in our last round. And they've just been helpful all along the way. And I think that's really important when you're looking for a partner to help you grow, that they're to know that if, you know, something's going wrong, they're going to be there to support you. And more often than not, people think that sometimes like investors are just there to sort of see the return on their money. But the reality is like they're there to help you work through the problems too.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And it's important to keep that in mind that it's a partnership. And so finding the right partner is just as important for you more than the cash, you know? So like if you're really looking for the cash, then you can go to a bank too. Or you can find other friends and family can give you like some of the first or crowdfunding also.
But I'd also say like raising investment is not success, right?
No. Mm-hmm.
Raising money like is not like, that's not
we
the
often
goal.
We would look at people who raise tons of money and be like, wow. And then we're like, now what? You know, like you raise too much money, you get stuck in the situation yeah. where you're, what rate did you raise it at? You know, what valuation? Like, what are you then going to go to? There's a huge shift that's happened. Like old school DTC companies would raise too much money and then they get stuck in the sense of like the valuation's too high. And so we didn't ever raise lots. We raised in tranches that were smaller that we felt comfortable with the valuation. We're like, that is the valuation of our company. That feels achievable. We can hit that definitely in sales in a couple of years.
And I think it's always about being creative and working out what's best for your business. Like, look, you know, like candidly, like if we'd have got to the point that we've got without raising any money, clearly that would be better. You know what I mean? We'd have more equity in the company, you know, and a bigger outcome for ourselves personally. For us, it was about finding the right balance of like, you know, which investors do we think can add a lot of value, and, you know, manufacturing products on scale does have a cost associated with it. You know, if you could get someone to just loan you the money at zero interest, then like obviously go for that, right? But there's not that many people willing to do it, unfortunately.
Yeah, especially in this environment, it's a tough feat. But once you do have the investments, you can grow the company, grow the team. When you're looking for good talent, how do you persuade them to go for a startup like Siri versus joining a P&G, for example, and really build out a team that you're happy with the culture?
Firstly, I would say that someone who's joining Siri might not be the same as someone who's joining P&G. So I wouldn't necessarily say we're competing for the same talent, because I think, you know, the skill sets required and the kind of person who's going to join a Siri is probably quite a different profile. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, like, hiring today is very different from 2 years ago when sort of no one knew us. I remember sort of, you know, you're selling a dream. Like, look, we have this hypothesis. We think this is going to work for these reasons. This is our experience.
You have, you know, to sell it real hard in the beginning.
Yeah.
We're grateful for our early employees, Mike, Peters, Dylan, for taking that risk, right? Because it's a risk that, you know, like, we hadn't shipped any units. Getting somebody to join as an employee, you're like, it's going to happen. It's going to be great. Trust us. It's hard. I'd say it's gotten easier now. But still, it's hard in general finding the right profiles, Mark said. Like, we wanted to find people early on who were willing to hold multiple plates, didn't want to be confined to one thing. They were okay with, like, I'll do a bit of that. I'll come to the trade show. I'll pitch there.
That risk and adventure.
I'll carry the boxes, you know, out the hall, you know, like, I'll put the labels on it. And so that being like, that's exciting. I'm happy to join that. That's a very different profile than somebody probably wants to go work for a corporate company. Like, they want that adrenaline. They want to see the fruit of their work immediately. Like, innovation at some of the companies I've worked at, Procter & Gamble, can take 10 years till you get to market. So, and you've got, you know, 200 person team touching it. So it's very different than, you know, we're 20 people today.
The funny thing is, like, we're just starting. Like, we haven't achieved any sort of like level of, where we want to get to, do you know what I mean? Like, we're probably like 1%, if that, on our way. And there's so much more to go to it. Like, in many ways, it feels like as fresh as it did 2 years ago when we were just like starting out. It's sort of like, we're like, you know.
It feels a little bit better.
It feels better, but like, you know, it's like we still have that, it's like this pioneer. Like, we've never been where we are today before. And when we started, we hadn't been there before. It's sort of you're constantly breaking new ground and like discovering new places, which is so much fun. And it's even more fun when you have people who are like crazy enough to come on that same journey.
Yeah.
And like, and just know that, you know, they're willing to do whatever it takes, you know, like, okay, today you're building a stand, or do you know what I mean? Like, we're assembling some desks, and like tomorrow you're going to be on an interview with this company or whatever. You know, it's really a real privilege, actually, to be able to share that with people.
Yeah, and to have them join us.
For sure. I mean, to that effect, looking forward, approaching the next summit, what are some other things you want to certify, or what are some things that you want to innovate and do that R&D with?
Well, I'd say, firstly, like, there's a lot of people that brush their teeth. Do you know what I mean? Like everyone. And I think there's a lot more that we can do within the category that needs change and needs improving.
We have young kids. They're constantly grabbing at our Siri brushes. So it seems like a natural thing we should look at.
And I think there's power in remaining focused. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like, you know, we could say like we're going to electric vehicles, but like Siri's, truthfully, like, there's, you know, a lot of work to be done in electric toothbrushes first. And there's a lot of people around the world who need one.
But on that note, without giving too much away, I mean, Siri stands for sustainable rituals. And Mark mentioned focus early on, you know, in our sort of 50-pie slide deck. We had charts of going into every other category in the world. The reality is, like, it's hard to do it well. And what we learned is what has helped us is our focus and doing something really well. And if you try to do too many things, you won't do them very well, and you might forget, you know, focusing on the main thing. So, but that said, there are other products near our category that aren't an enjoyable experience, aren't very sustainable, and, you know, maybe they are. They deliver some performance. And so as we look at new things around our toothbrush, we think, how do we design with those sort of three pillars? How do we make something different that is differentiated but enjoyable to use, that delivers, you know, a good performance level or a great performance level and is more sustainable? And if you look at the oral care category, there's a lot of things that don't even think about sustainability. That's kind of like an afterthought. Or like, we have recycled paper packaging, done. But there's a lot of disposable plastic in our industry. And so we're starting there.
We're coming for you.
We're coming for disposable plastic. And we're constantly innovating our core line with that in mind. So our plant-based heads, we recycle for customers. They're industrially compostable, but they're not home compostable. But we're looking into new ways of making, you know, designing with sustainability is a key innovation feature too. How can we make that even better? How can we make our brush even better with feedback we've gotten from customers? Like, we have on our Slack channel, we get Trustpilot reviews in, and we read every one. We get negative ones. We get, it wasn't for me, and we read why, and we take it into account. And then our innovation team banks that into a sort of model where we start saying, like, is that something we could include in a new version?
Watch this space. We've got big plans.
Sounds very exciting, and looking forward to all the ways that Siri will expand and change the way that we do our rituals. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's Guy Safavi and Mark Rushmore, the co-founders of Siri. Our show is produced by Gogo Zoger and Megan Coyle. Engineers are Matt Schwartz and Miku Betlem. Benjamin Gottlieb is our managing producer, and I'm your host, Shuang Esther Shan. We recorded this episode at Cube East. Come back every Tuesday and Thursday to catch brand new episodes of Shopify Masters. And if you're still listening, go share this episode with another entrepreneur. Thank you so much.